At the beginning, it was what we were aspiring to be. The middle part, who we are today. Now, what comes out of my mouth is, I've been at this 15 years, and I'm really proud of my team.
Just, you know, look happy. Evoke a response, man. I mean, Tom, welcome back, man. Welcome back to another episode of Mission Driven Entrepreneurship, Mission Driven Podcast. I'm Rich Brubaker, and on the other end of this is Tom Stater. We are Asia-based mission-driven entrepreneurs. Here today, this week, we're going to wrap up the story about rich people doing better. We're just going to wrap up really quickly one about Elon Musk and how that World Food Program thing came out, and then actually a few lessons about how you engage, how you create trust, and how you evoke a response so that your sales, your pitches to potential donors or investors has a higher hit rate. I think there's a lot of lessons here. We talked through a few of them and have a lot of fun. So hope you'll enjoy this. Tom, as always, thank you very much.
No, but you know what?
Did you see that the World Food Program followed up with Elon Musk? It went to the next stage. Elon calls him out and says, show me the books. I'll give you the money. And the head guy for World Food Program goes, not only will he show you the books, why don't you meet us on site? Why don't you see the work that we do? When you and I are talking about when we're presenting, about how we present in person and creating tangibility, I thought like that hook, that invitation to come and see our work, I thought that was a nice touch. If they can convert them and they get the billion or whatever they're asking for, the 40, I forget what the number is. I mean, kudos to them.
I could see, you know, this World Food Organization really going for it. Yeah. And are they going to get like 2% of his, you know, money? Probably not. I bet they're going to get like a cool billion out of him or something. Elon Musk could have just ignored it because honestly, the news cycle is fast enough, but he leaned into it and they baited him. Yeah. And he took the bait. And so I find that to be really interesting.
What makes for effective bait? When you are a founder and you're trying to bring people into your mission, like what makes for the most effective bait, do you think?
Alcohol. I mean, okay. There's not a lot of effective events held at coffee shops. And there is a clear, at fundraisers, there is a clear correlation to the amount of bottles consumed per capita and how much money you raise.
But you have to get people in the room to begin with before they consume the alcohol. So what brings people in the room to begin with?
Honestly, it's relationships. It is not the organization. I am convinced that no one has ever raised money from someone for an organization for the first donation. The initial donation, it never has anything to do with the organization.
Is it the mission of the organization?
The individual asking.
Right.
Does there trust for the individual who is asking with the individual that is giving? Mm. And then the second donation, that, you know, it's maybe 50-50, 50% results, program, whatever, output, right, impact, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And the individual asking. Third time, it even gets smaller. You might even get the 75%, 80%, 90% organization, 10, 20, 30%, you know, individual. And over time, that individual, you know, the organization becomes more important. But that initial ask, it's the person.
I think the first one I want to talk about. The second one, I think, comes down to, did you do what you said you would do on the first round? If you did, you'll get the second one. The third one is kind of like, I've made a real commitment to this organization. This is my third time, fourth time, fifth time around. What has been the value of my donation, or what am I getting out of it? Like, is it helping? Is it solving? And it could be a personal impact. It could be something else, or it could just be, I want to participate in this challenge. And this is the best organization that I can find. And I still trust Tom and Rich with my money. But on the first one, trust. How much of that is us just being really excited about the work we're doing or really convincing about the mission that we're on?
It's 100% the individual to the individual. I am convinced it's nothing more than that. It is the trust between the individual asking and the individual giving. And it's not, even if it's a company or a foundation or a family or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's the individual giving. It's the individual putting their name on the line.
Right.
And that person leaning over the table being like, are you really going to do what you're saying you're going to do?
Mm.
And granted, particularly in startup, all that comes into it.
Particularly in the early phases, right?
And even all you got. 15 years in, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's even 15 years in,
but
it is still.
Is it? You know, I'm questioning because I feel like in the early phases, I was talking to people like, I'm going to do this. And if you work with me, and there's like this blind belief that we could do something together that was insane or different or whatever. But now I feel like even with the same people, here are my 8 examples. Here are the 3 projects. Here is the previous impact as a really core part of building trust. Now, that might also be a function of how much money I'm asking for now versus before. Like, I think you said you started with 10 grand, and I think my first check was 15. So now we're sometimes open to the possibility of a 6-figure check, a mid 6, like that's different, right? But when you're going after individuals, I feel like a lot of that's just like, I am super passionate about this cause.
I mean, that's it. Like passion, all that. It's what that individual brings to the table.
The thing that kept coming back to my mind was, I am ultimately selling best when I'm the most passionate about what I'm selling. How did you pick this topic of rural education? Where did you come up with this to begin with? And how have you maintained that passion for libraries and for books and for education?
I lived with the country director of Room to Read in Vietnam. 6 months after leaving that apartment, I was in China, having a couple of drinks with the executive vice president of the company that I worked for. And he said, I was doing marketing for them. And he said, we want to do some CSR. You did nonprofit work in Cambodia. What do you think? And I said,
right.
How about libraries?
Yeah.
I lived with someone who donated some libraries, and I read a book, half a book. I think we should do it. And right. So we hatched together over that evening and the next day, a basic plan, and we implemented it. I wasn't present for those 2 libraries. I managed the funding and I managed the aggregation of funds and the distribution of the funds. I wasn't at the library donation. I actually moved to Vietnam before those. Then the passion for what I did, because then I went and donated 7 more and about 25 more, 50 more. I didn't get the passion for it for until my 50th library. I didn't really believe that there was a.
So what kept you? What drove you through that? What drove you to the 50?
Because everyone told me that it was a dumb idea. Like everyone, including one of the richest people I've ever met in China. Her, she was like, schools in China don't need libraries, and I'm like, well, maybe I'm right. And she's like, you're definitely wrong.
So then you reach 50. You got passionate about education then? Literacy?
It was one school. It was one school. I went to it and I was like, this is the challenge.
Yeah.
This is what the
frickity frack
is this?
Yeah.
And going back to that school and providing that library, I got it.
So what happened to the school? You saw the kids, you saw the school, like what happened?
Me, I'm an infrastructure guy. I'm not a kid guy. I mean, there's some people who go to a school as a volunteer and they kind of break down. They're like, oh my God, these children are in like X situation. I am not that guy. I go in and I am clinical. I'm like, okay, these kids don't have a library. The school is falling down, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can make a difference. I can bring tables, chairs, bookshelves, teacher training, monitoring, evaluation. Great. Bang.
All right. You were never the rabid founder, like, oh my God, we're going to change this. Ah.
No. Mm. No. I created a presentation that communicated through a little bit of comedy, telling a story of that school that changed my, because you need to have that. Like, you can maybe trick one person, but you can't trick 15 years. Do you know what I mean? You can't trick 15 years.
Have you maintained for the 15 the same level? Does it ebb?
No.
How do you get it back?
And flows and
how do you get your mojo back, man?
Well, I think it's just hard. I think you just kind of have to power through it. You have to, part of it is I'm trapped, as most founders find themselves to be. You know, they're like, everyone else can quit except me. Fuck. Yep. You know, like
there's days.
There are years. There are years when I wish I was working somewhere else. Mm. But it's looking back and saying, listen, we impacted a million kids. This is worth it. This is worth it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it comes back. And I'm in one of those moments right now where I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. I think that it's interesting. I think we're rebuilding the organization we're taking it in a different direction. I'm a builder. I'm a founder. I'm not a maintainer. Once we get into maintenance, Tom falls asleep.
Yeah.
Right. Team. I'm not an HR guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're in a rebuilding phase or a building phase or a creative phase. I find that to be fascinating. I find it to be interesting. I find it to be fun.
That's fine. Because look, we're surrounded. I mean, you've seen this, like the ultra rabid, I am going to change the world on this issue. They're super passionate about the issue. It's super tangible. Now you're clinical. So I would walk into a school. I wouldn't get emotional, but I could make an emotional connection. Boom. I'd walk in, I'd see a kid, the kid would smile. I'm going to do whatever I can. Walk into an early care center, see a smile, do whatever I can. Walk into an early care center, see just heartbreaking conditions. I'm going to do what I can. And I believed in the power of volunteers. Although I won't say that I was passionate enough about volunteers to believe that they would change the world. Like I believe that I called the gateway drug. Like if you could get someone to volunteer and they enjoyed it, they would find other ways to maintain a relationship with that issue, with the cause, whatever, and maybe bring other tools to it. But volunteering in itself wasn't the solution. So I never drank that Kool-Aid. But then over time, like the you start topping up your gas tank on the impact of the organization, the impact of the team. We've worked with this partner. We can see progression. There's those years you're like, I just want to get out. I just want to get out. But when you're in that, like, what do you draw back on? I mean, I would draw back on the early pictures, or I would draw back on, I don't have a choice because this is the organization. But those weren't like the fun. Like, I wasn't making great sales when I was doing that. I would have to tell a story that was evoking something.
I've never been able to evoke a story or an emotion from I'm not that guy. I'm just, I am not that guy. I cannot tell that story. It is physically impossible.
When I come back to the topic, like all that is, I think what makes for great pitching. When you are trying to get funds, when you're trying to find partners, when you're trying to hire a team, when you as a founder have that and you feel that gel and your passion. I mean, I was passionate about the causes and the ability to have a impact, you were more clinical, but at the end of the day, impact was part of that clinical mindset. Like you can affect change, right?
Results. I know you hate the word impact.
Results.
No. I don't kind of hate it. Yeah. I mean, I put up with the word, but when you look at my presentation in comparison to some of my other team members' presentations, we don't have like a set fundraising pitch deck that everyone must.
Right.
Must use. We all kind of have our own.
Yeah.
And they're mine is
strengths.
Yeah. Mine is facts. It's a bunch of facts, numbers through big, huge images. There's no words. Couple numbers thrown here and there.
Yeah.
And that's how I do it.
You can do that because you have the 15, 17 years of experience in your library up here that you can just draw on, and you can tell a story that one of your team members couldn't.
Yeah. I've been giving the same presentation for 15 years.
Yeah.
So I'll be honest with you. It's a prettier version from the first one, but it worked, and I never really kind of backed away from it.
Okay. I'm going to pivot to the last point of this conversation off that. It worked, and I never really had to pivot off of that. Do you have to change, like, has things changed during COVID in China the last 18 months to where you're like, the old way didn't work, I need to tap a new method?
You know, on a macro level, no. On a micro level, we're approaching more foundations for funding than we were ever.
Okay.
Ever.
And do they care about the story, or do they want the clinical fact?
I don't know. Okay. I'll be honest with you. I do not know. I do know that in America and internationally, pitching to foundations is clinical. Like it is, I don't know why I keep saying that word, but you send out the email, the request, you get an email back saying, yes, we want
it's entirely
your one page. And then it's like, it is just this, it's awful. It is an awful experience. But in China, from what I found, is that it's more relationship-based.
Yeah.
There's a lot more face-to-face, or at least a lot more conversations. The foundation wants you to win the bid. Like if they're talking they're like, listen, we like what you do. We want you to put it in this. We're not going to send out an RFP to every single nonprofit in China to apply. We like what you do. We want to get your numbers, your information in this format. We want to give it a go. And I respect that.
And that's interesting, because in a way, like, you know, when you first start off, when you talk to companies, when you're talking to individuals, you are exuding your passion for something. It's buy into my vision, support us, you'll do good. But with the foundations, it's very much like, this is the setup, this is the operations, this is how we'll measure. We have a couple foundations we work with, but they don't buy our story. They're buying what they believe is the end result. But I'm wondering, like, is there a space, like, is there a space for how you write things in a way that's passionate or exudes the emotion, and that has a higher success rate? Or do you just drop that and show, like, you're just more capable, and then that's all that they care about?
I'll be honest with you. I don't do anything with it. I am not a part of it on any level. And I mean, any level, like with regards to like rotaries, with regards to companies, I'm a part of that. But with regards to foundations, I think this is the first thing at the organization that has literally zero input from me on any level. Like the team have created results, built plan, did not ask for my input. And in my opinion, is one of the seeds that I can see, like, hey, this is going to, this has the potential of outliving me.
Cool.
You know what I mean? Like, they have built something within the organization that is truly 100% divorced from Tom. And cool. I think that's awesome.
To that's be able how to say grow. Like,
yeah, well, you know, and I'm not saying that like, again, like when I look at our fundraising pipe for the next month, 6 months out, none of the companies I am speaking to directly, but one.
Okay.
But I'm still a part of the conversation. You know right. what I mean? I'm still a part of the process.
Yeah.
Whereas the foundations, I am zero.
Gotcha.
So,
what's great on this for me is like at the end of the day, I think to make effective sales, you have to be passionate about what is you're selling. And the easier it is as the founder to do that, the more successful you're going to be. Now, as you grow up, as you get bigger, as the funds grow in size or the duration of the project grows in length, you have to add the clinical part to that to show that you deserve their trust. So I get, you know, like going back to what you were saying about trust being important, how you form trust changes over time, depending on who you're talking to and in what context of the pitch you're giving. And I think this is kind of where, if I'm looking at how do you do that on social media? How do you do that in presentation? How do you do that over coffee? They're all different. But if I'm the founder, I think the one thing I need to do is make sure that I'm that relationship I am exciting through the work that I believe I participate in or the vision for change I want to see. I think like that's just critical for me. And if I get that done, my percentage win rate is higher than if I'm dulled out, burnt out, not really excited about the work that we're doing. And I'm too clinical. Like we've been at this for 15 years and we have a team of 20, like, I feel like you have to, as the founder, if you're pitching, just rainbows.
Well, yes and no. I think, in my opinion, my pitch is, I have the same deck, literally the same sure. deck, just different yeah. pictures, looks prettier, logos are a lot yeah. nicer. But the words that come out of my mouth on each of those slides are very different from what, like at the beginning, it was what we were aspiring to be.
Yeah.
The middle part for the vast majority of the organization's life for coming out of my mouth is who we are today.
Yeah.
Now, what comes out of my mouth is I've been at this 15 years.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of my team.
Right.
And this is what they do. And there is a passion in all three of those,
yeah.
but there is a tone that I think is more subdued. You yeah. know what I mean? Like there it, is it, like, I've been it at it 15 years. So when people look at me, they're like, wow, 15 years. And wow, they're like, I just got this job 9 months ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the end of the day, all of those would evoke some kind of response that hopefully.
Yes. And I think if you're 15 years in and you're making this and you're still pitching what you want the organization to be in the future, aspiring to be, I'm sorry.
No, you're lost.
Something went wrong.
Yeah, you're lost.
like, yeah. And so your story, I think you need to like allow for your story to change and you have to forgive yourself for not being able to communicate that level of emotion. Yeah. You know what I mean? Of like, you know, but you have to find a story. It's just really important, you know?
The end.